Case number 07-1343, Energy Services, Inc., Petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Norton for the petitioner, Mrs. Soper for the respondent, and Mr. Beeney for the intervener.
May it please the court, I'm Floyd Norton, arguing on behalf of Entergy Services. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. This case concerns the meaning of a contract, whether the power coordination agreement between Entergy and AECC recognizes the impact of system-wide operating constraints on the ability of the Entergy dispatcher to call for energy from the generating units Entergy jointly owns with AECC. All sides agree that the key provisions of the contract are Article 5, Section 5, and the redispatching principles referred to there and found in Exhibit E. Article 5, Section 5 requires the dispatch in real time of all resources for maximum combined efficiency.
Can I just start on the standard of review? You agree that if it's ambiguous, we have to defer to a reasonable interpretation by FERC, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. But our contention is the agreement is not ambiguous. Maximum combined efficiency means that each party's resources are drawn on to serve the combined load with system constraints necessarily recognized. It follows that the theoretical standalone AECC-only redispatch should be the same. Otherwise, the reference to maximum combined efficiency is pointless. There would be no need for any dispatch instruction if AECC were completely insulated from the effects of dispatch. And Article 5, Section 5 recognizes that, providing that AECC's resources will be redispatched, considering their availability on an hour-to-hour basis. The key provision in the redispatching principles is number 3, which calls for the redispatch to reflect other operating constraints which limit the availability of the plant to the EAI dispatcher. And here the key phrase is availability to the dispatcher. Availability to the dispatcher includes both unit outages, those at the plant, and remote constraints. As AECC's own witness acknowledged, he said that remote constraints, quote, won't limit the available capacity of the plant. They may limit the dispatcher's ability to get it.
Wait, can you just hold for 1 second? You're talking about Principle 3, is that right?
Mr. Fish.
Huh? You were talking about Principle
3. Principle 3.
Is that correct?
Principle 3, yes.
Yeah. And that's the one that says for redispatch purposes, appropriate consideration will be given to other operating constraints?
That's correct.
So the other side says it's the word other that matters here. What do you say to that? Other than the ones above.
I think other operating constraints that recognize those that affect the system at large and the transmission system and affect the dispatcher's ability to get to the plant. That same concept is seen in the definition of replacement energy, for instance, which applies on redispatch. That definition says that replacement energy...
It would help if you tell us where you're reading from so we can find it. That's all.
Replacement energy is a defined term in the contract. I believe it's Article 2, Section 18. And replacement energy is... Yes. Defined as energy that a party needs to purchase for reasons including, among other things, transmission system operations. Thus, the need for replacement energy on redispatch is triggered by circumstances on the transmission system, which is well beyond any plant boundary. What FERC has done is created a boundary around the plant, insulating AECC from anything that happens beyond that boundary. But there's nothing in the contract to support a boundary. And our contention is that Principle 3 eliminates any boundary by requiring recognition of constraints that limit availability to the dispatcher.
When did your client first take that position?
It was, I think, raised starting in 2002.
How long have they been operating under these contracts before they raised that position?
I mean, these contracts have been in place since 1977 or 78.
For 20-some years, you've been operating under the interpretation ultimately adopted by FERC. Is that correct?
That is correct, but the...
And you're saying their position is unreasonable, given the standard of review, that we have, when all they have to do is have a rational interpretation, and you're saying it's irrational to interpret the contract the way your client did for over 20 years?
Well, I think first you have to find the contract terms to be ambiguous, and we say they're not.
Having done all that, you're then asking us to hold that the interpretation is not a rational interpretation.
Your Honor, as the presiding judge in the case below found, there is no consistent past practice in dealing with system operating constraints, because most of these constraints simply did not exist in the past, or their magnitude was significantly smaller than what currently exists on the Entergy system today. And the record establishes that some types of constraints...
Changes in magnitude and not kind. Is that not correct?
I think some were both. Some were changes in magnitude, others in kind, as new legal requirements were imposed on the operation of the transmission system with open access, with independent power producers and interconnection requirements and so on.
Is that a finding of fact by the judge that FERC overruled? You said what the judge had decided. Now, is that
I would say FERC.
Right.
Sidestepped. But
sorry?
FERC overruled the judge. I don't know that they overruled that particular finding of fact.
Well, that raises yet another problem with respect to our standard of review. If that's a fact finding, then we can only overturn FERC if it's clearly erroneous. You say it's distinguishable, that is, the prior history was distinguishable based upon the ALJ's finding, which FERC itself reversed. We're bound to uphold, clearly erroneous isn't even the right standard, substantial evidence. We have to uphold FERC's fact-finding, not the ALJ's fact-finding.
I don't think there is any dispute as to the facts. I think there is a dispute as to the significance of the facts.
Well, that's why I was asking you.
Yes.
So it's not, you don't think that's a question of fact?
No, I don't. The key provision of the contract, again, is Article 5, Section 5, which provides for an actual dispatch to achieve maximum combined efficiency and then a theoretical redispatch of AECC's resources, considering their availability on an hour-to-hour basis. AECC has acknowledged that in an actual standalone dispatch of its resources, which the redispatch is intended to simulate, it would encounter system operating constraints. And there's nothing unusual about that. It's part and parcel of economic dispatch. For instance, Section 1234 of the Energy Policy Act of 2005 defines economic dispatch as the operation of generation facilities to produce energy at the lowest cost to reliably serve consumers, recognizing any operational limits of generation and transmission facilities. And FERC itself has said there are always physical constraints limiting transmission service. To quote FERC, no one is exempt from the limitations of the transmission system. It is simply not an infinite resource. That's in a Florida Power and Light case. FERC did not apply that in this case. Here, FERC concludes that AECC is exempt and that somehow Entergy intended to hold AECC harmless from any effect of system constraints, including those that AECC itself causes with its service to the Nucor steel mill and its off-system purchases and sales of energy. AECC admitted it caused system constraints. It's counterintuitive to think that Entergy intended to indemnify AECC from such impacts. And there's certainly no corresponding quid pro quo in the contract. The contract terms, again, are clear. Under Article 5, Section 5, for billing purposes, AECC resources are theoretically redispatched, considering their availability on an hour-to-hour basis. That's not capability, as FERC would have you believe. And then under Principle 3, there's recognition of other operating constraints which limit the availability of the plant to the dispatcher. Again, availability to the dispatcher goes way beyond what's happening at the plant. And Principles 4, 5, 6, and 7 all require that consideration be given to Principle 3.
I just want to, again, I'm a little stuck on the standard of review question with respect to the prior behavior of the parties. So on JA 351, which is paragraph 70 of the order, it says, Entergy concedes that some system constraints occurred in the past, however infrequent or minor, and yet it never charged on that basis until 2000. some 23 years after the power agreement was executed, then only and then only over the objection of Arkansas Electric. And then it says, the record is replete with evidence that for over 23 years, both parties regarded Arkansas Electric as entitled to pay the lower incremental fuel cost of its units when the units were capable of meeting Arkansas Electric's load, regardless of whether and to what extent Energy actually dispatched power from those units. Is that are you challenging that as a matter of fact? That statement, the record is complete.
No, we don't challenge that as a matter of fact.
So it's only the significance of it that you're challenging.
Yes, because there were not the system operating constraints that affected dispatch during those years to any significant degree. And there's testimony in the record as to how there's considerable testimony as to what gave rise to the operating constraints, various legal requirements imposed on the operation of the system, and the magnitude of the complaints of the constraints and how they arose in the years immediately preceding July 2004, when Entergy changed the billing algorithm and that set off the dispute.
Thank you.
So what's happening? Arkansas is producing electricity that Entergy doesn't need? Is that it in a nutshell? Or can't use?
No, what happens here is that AECC and Entergy pool their resources to meet the combined loads of both entities. Then under the contract, after the fact, there is a simulation of the dispatch based only on AECC's resources to meet its loads.
Tell me what dispatch is.
Dispatch is, under the laws of physics, electric generation has to match electric load or demand instantaneously at all times. Dispatch is where you call upon various generating units to supply power in order to meet the load as it changes over time. It starts off low at night, peaks typically in the late afternoon when air conditioning kicks in, and so on. Dispatch is the operation of the system to match generation and load.
Okay, so the idea is that Arkansas had a greater generation capacity than was called upon? As far as the FERC is concerned, that made them made it available?
No, I think under the agreement, both AECC and Entergy pool their generating resources.
Acronyms, that's very confusing.
Okay, the co-ops and Entergy pool their resources, serve the combined load. Entergy uses them to serve the combined load. Then on redispatch, there's a...
What is redispatch?
That's just billing?
It's a billing mechanism to determine whether AECC had resources sufficient to meet its load and what the cost was of those resources. And so it's a billing mechanism. And it's our position that for that to have any meaning with respect to reality and consistent with the terms of the contract, that redispatch should reflect the circumstances on the overall system, including constraints on deliverability of resources. Thank you.
So can you just describe what constraints you're talking about? They all possible constraints? Who would decide what the constraints are?
The system constraints we're describing result from, as I say, energy supply and demand has to match at all times. Because there are a lot of other users of the transmission system. There are qualifying facilities that are able to put power on the system anytime they please.
Is a constraint?
That creates imbalances, and Entergy has to adjust the output of the units under its control to bring the system back into balance.
Right. So can a constraint just mean that Entergy can get the power cheaper from somebody other than Arkansas? Is that a constraint?
No, not at all. I mean, that would not be a constraint that would be.
When you talk about the efficiency of the system, you're not talking about using the cheapest energy.
With dispatch and redispatch as well, you always start with the cheapest resources and sort of step up the ladder.
I understand that, but is the decision to use the cheapest, is that, and therefore not to use the co-ops, is that a constraint? Is that, would that be regarded as a constraint?
Well, if there are circumstances on the transmission system that prevent the dispatcher from having access to the output of a unit that can't necessarily run the cheapest unit, it has to run a more expensive one. And that's really what has given rise to this dispute. But those circumstances are beyond the control of the dispatcher. They're the result of legal requirements and of open access that gives other users the ability to use the system.
Okay, thank you, counsel. We'll hear from the respondent.
May it please the court. Dispatch is physical, but this contract separated out billing and said billing would be done on a redispatch basis, a theoretical basis. First of all, the commission found that the language of the contract was ambiguous, and I think appropriately so. The billing provisions are scattered all over the contract. Then the commission did a painstaking review of the contract language, construed the billing provisions, and said the intent of the parties, why even have billing based on redispatch if billing is going to follow physical dispatch? The intent of the parties seems to be what Arkansas said. The contract was ambiguous, but it was more reasonable to read it the way Arkansas was reading it, that if its units were up and running, then it didn't matter how they were dispatched. For redispatch purposes, they would be billed at the lower rate.
Is your understanding of the opponent's position that however it's done on dispatch is how it must be done on redispatch?
Yes.
So there's no, and your understanding of their position is that there's no difference at all between dispatch
it
and
seems
redispatch.
To be what their argument is.
Oh,
that,
we'll be asking whether that is. I didn't.
That's the only way I can really understand what they're arguing. The commission said that the commission said that the question was what was availability under the contract, and availability is never defined under the contract. And when you look at JA 345 and opinion 488, it said it could be read two ways. It said it could be read either way. But then when you look at the billing provisions, and the commission emphasized
JA 355.
345 is where the commission says paragraph 59.
Oh, commission. I thought you were referring to the agreement.
No. The commission found that it was ambiguous. When we go to the agreement itself, and we look at the language in section 5, and that's it. I have it at joint appendix 111. It appears different places in the joint appendix. Section 5 talks about when you get to redispatch, it'll be on a retroactive basis, considering their availability, their being the units, the resources availability. The commission said, well, that doesn't really answer the question. So we now turn to the redispatch provision.
Is this principle 3 you're talking about?
No, I'm talking about section 5.
What about principle 3 that says?
Principle 3, what the commission did was read principle 3 in context. First of all, it said, since this is a billing dispute, principles 6 and 7 seem to be the key redispatch principles because they actually go to when Entergy pays the higher, Entergy is able to bill a higher rate, and when Entergy is able to bill a lower rate.
I got that, but what's the meaning of 3?
It says, well, 3.
For redispatch purposes, appropriate consideration.
But what the commission said about 3 was, and this is at JA 344, the commission discusses it. It said, first of all, you have to read 3 in terms of 1 and 2.
That's the emphasis on the word other, is that right?
What the commission said was, this doesn't really answer the question in itself. When you look at 1 and 2, they're talking about the units. When you look at 3, it says other operating constraints, but it doesn't say, as Entergy would like it to say, system operating constraints. There's no reason that other operating constraints in this context and the commission read it in context, doesn't just mean operating constraints of the individual units. And indeed, as Judge Santel pointed out, that was the way this contract was billed from 1977 until 2004. We're getting two different stories from Entergy on that. First, they say, well, some of these constraints are Entergy's fault, or are Arkansas's fault. And then they say, well, no, it's all because things that happened in the 1990s, such as qualifying facilities. The fact is, under the course of performance evidence, the commission looked at it and said there was no doubt, based on the testimony of even the affidavits attached to the answer to the complaint, that Entergy had always built it the way Arkansas was construing it until 2004, and then it said, we're going to build it differently because we're losing money now. So that gets us to fairness, and the commission said, look, this is the contract you made. What we're doing here is construing the contract. You were obviously happy with it for a long time, and you've got a lot of benefits from it. You were able to dispatch the Arkansas resources however you wanted to. You got paid $600 million. If there's a problem with the contract itself, Entergy has a remedy. It can come in under Section 205. The contract itself gives it a remedy to come in and say, hey, this contract is no longer just and reasonable. But that's not what it did. It just changed the billing contrary to what the commission found was a reasonable reading of the contract.
What's your understanding of what Entergy regards operating restraints as?
They regard operating constraints as anything. Entergy has a four-state system, and they regard any constraint anywhere on the multi-state system as being an operating constraint. That means that they can bill Arkansas, even Arkansas's units are up and running.
I understand it could be a constraint somewhere else in the system, but what is a constraint? How are they arguing that the word constraint should be interpreted?
Well, I don't think there's really much discussion about that. The constraint means that somehow they have to. It's not clear in the record whether they have to or they want to.
My question is, does it mean that the constraint is they have to use the cheapest energy?
No.
It doesn't mean
no.
That.
No. Okay. No. In fact, they're arguing the contrary, that sometimes they have to buy this qualifying facility energy. That's more expensive. Sometimes. So they want to make Arkansas pay a higher price because of the problem they have elsewhere, because of the problem Entergy has elsewhere in the system. It wants to make Arkansas pay a higher price under the contract. The commission said that's not a...
When would Entergy this, but I'll ask you, when under Entergy's theory would Arkansas ever pay the lowest price, the lower price?
If it actually dispatched Arkansas's resources on real-time dispatch, is my understanding, that's when it would get pay the lower rate. But not if it was available.
And they didn't use
them. And they didn't use them. But that's why the contract has redispatch billing in it. That's the whole point, as the commission found. So I think it's an ambiguous contract.
If that were the case, you wouldn't need these provisions, right, if they were correct?
That's certainly the commission. The commission says that specifically at JA 418. Okay. If there are no further questions?
Seeing none, thank you, counsel.
Thank
there
you.
Is an intervener in the case. Who gets 3 minutes maximum.
May it please the court. My name is Sean Beeney. I'm representing Arkansas Electric Cooperative. I'd like to go right to some of the questions that have been asked here. A lot of the discussion has been, what does constraints mean? What does Entergy mean by constraints? What they actually did in July of 2004 was to simply eliminate substitute energy. At JA 1281, you'll find a document. It's a public document appended to a confidential document that instructs the billing department. It says, modify the Entergy Arkansas Incorporated co-owner billing process for Arkansas Electric and the other co-owners so that capability for the Entergy Arkansas Inc. Independence and White Bluff units is equal to the generation of the unit each hour.
What page is that again? I'm sorry.
JA 1281. In other words, as Judge Randolph has perceived, they simply destroyed the purpose of the redispatch. They equated the capability of the units, as that term is employed in Redispatch Principle 6, with the output of the units.
I thought Grand Gulf was going to take care of all your needs.
Grand Gulf took care of AECC's needs to some extent. In fact, for many years, we believe that Entergy sold us nuclear energy out of Grand Gulf at a coal-fired price. That is, we paid more than the incremental cost of that energy, but we were content to do that, Your Honor, because the redispatch for us was the key to the deal in the late 70s. When we paid $600 million for participation in the Independence and White Bluff units that Arkansas Power and Light, as it then was struggling to build, the key to it for us was that we would be able to realize the benefit of those investments by having our energy costs reflect those investments, not how Entergy chose to operate and develop its system. We turned over the real-time dispatch of those units, and indeed all of our units, to Entergy Arkansas in exchange for assurance that our energy needs up to the capabilities of those units would be met by those units, even when Entergy, for reasons of its own, chose to turn them down. The questions you asked, Your Honor, about what are constraints, how will we identify them, what are the differences among them, are things that the cooperative would have no way of knowing. It doesn't have access to the information to verify one constraint or another. And indeed, in fact, although Entergy clothes what it did in the language of constraints, because that gives them an arguable contractual basis for it, what they did, as the directions to the billing department show, is simply eliminate substitute energy, destroy the redispatch.
Thank you, counsel. Your time is exhausted. Does petitioner have any time left?
Petitioner did not have any time left.
We'll give him back 2 minutes for rebuttal.
I'd appreciate if you could answer. So opposing counsel says that under your interpretation, dispatch and redispatch are the same. Are they right or are they wrong?
No, they're wrong, Your Honor. Okay. There are differences between dispatch and redispatch. One example, and this was quite prevalent in earlier years, is when Entergy, for instance, creates a constraint by its own actions, by its own choice, or for instance, when Entergy finds an economic purchase off system and makes that purchase and therefore avoids the need to run the co-owned units. In that circumstance, the redispatch would give AECC credit for its interest in the unit, even though the unit did not run. So that's a clear difference between redispatch and dispatch. As to the FERC's claim of ambiguity about the meaning of availability, we think that's a complete straw man that FERC included there with an eye toward the Court of Appeals. The key phrase in the contract is, in Principle 3, is availability to the dispatcher. There's not a dispute about the meaning of availability. It's the significance of the term to the dispatcher, at which we say necessarily includes a component of deliverability of the output from a unit. FERC focuses on Principles 6 and 7. Principle 7 explicitly requires consideration of Principle 3. Principle 6 indirectly requires consideration of Principle 3 by using a definition of incremental cost under Principle 4 that itself refers to Principle 3.
Section 5, and it doesn't say availability to the dispatcher.
Principle 3.
I'm looking at Section 5, Article 5, Section 5, which is the provision.
It talks about availability on an hour-to-hour basis.
Right, it doesn't say availability to the dispatcher.
Article 5, Section 5 goes on to say that the redispatch principles in Exhibit E will govern the billing. Redispatch Principle 3 talks about other operating constraints which limit the availability of the plant to the EAI dispatcher.
Why is that Why is it unreasonable to read that as meaning other operating constraints within the plant? Which, I mean, their argument is that the use of the word other is, trying to remember what the Latin phrase is, but it means the same as or in the same idea as the number one and two. I'll think of it probably after we leave here. But there's there you go. Ad justem generis, that when they use the word other in a statute, here in a contract, it means to refer to other things of the same like. So if their argument is one and two have to do with plant-related constraints, well, and these are other, why? What's wrong with that as an interpretation?
Well, the constraints, it's informed and modified by constraints which limit the availability of the plant to the dispatcher.
Wouldn't an internal constraint in the plant limit its availability to the dispatcher?
If all we were concerned about is what was at the plant, we really wouldn't need Principle 3, I don't believe.
Sort of a catch-all for things not included in 1 and 2. Is that? I'm not saying that's the correct. I have no idea, frankly, what the correct interpretation is, but
fortunately,
I don't need.
In addition, for instance, replacement energy, which is a key billing provision, that's defined in terms of factors out beyond the plant boundary. It explicitly recognizes transmission system conditions. So if you read all of these principles together, I think you are left unavoidably with the conclusion that we're talking about more than just what happens at the plant.
All right, unless my colleagues have further questions, your time is up. And
thank you.
Seeing none, the case will be submitted. Give us a recess.